How did you spend your night during the first presidential debate? Did you watch it at home, in a bar, or at a friend's house? Did you listen to it on the radio or tune it out altogether? Well, the staff of WNYC's Only Human podcast spent that night in an unusual way, collecting people's saliva. Here to explain why are two members of Team Only Human, reporter Amanda Aronchik and project manager Elaine Chen. Welcome to our show.
Hi, Leonard.
Hi, Leonard.
So you weren't just collecting saliva, you were really looking for cortisol levels in the spit?
It was about the strangest night I've ever had as a reporter, without a doubt. We were collecting spit. Mm-hmm. We went to several debate watch parties. We were there for the first presidential debate, and we went to three different debate watch parties. Two were Republican and one was Democrat. And the idea was to collect saliva to be able to measure stress in people's spit.
And cortisol helps you measure that. What is cortisol?
So cortisol is a hormone that your body produces every day. It's usually at its highest levels in the morning, and then it just naturally goes down. So it's part of the thing that helps you get up in the morning. But if you experience certain kinds of stress, it will go up again because it's part of your body's response to how it handles it. So it will help restore energy that's used by that first wave of adrenaline. So that's why we were looking at cortisol as one marker of stress.
And what got you thinking that it might be a good idea to look at cortisol in relation to the presidential election?
I think it started out as a very personal thing, which was I was finding the election very stressful, as I imagine many other people were. And I was actually engaging with it very, very little. I was trying to watch as little as possible. But I work.
Even though you work in a newsroom.
Even though I work in a newsroom. I know I am surrounded by people reporting on the news day in and day out. But it's been incredibly stressful. And in the media, it's been incredibly stressful. And we were trying to find people who were looking at the intersection of health and politics. And the stress idea came up. And one of our producers, Julia Longoria, found these researchers out in Nebraska. This is the work that they do, is they look at biology and politics.
Doctors French and Smith, had they collaborated before?
The two of them have been collaborating for about 5 or 6 years.
What did they study?
So Kevin Smith is a political scientist, and he's in University of Nebraska at Lincoln, and he is he's the biopolitics guy. He's the guy who looks at biology and politics. And 5 or 6 years ago, he wanted to do something in hormones, and so he got in touch with Dr. Jeffrey French, who's actually spent most of his career looking at monkeys. So he looks at endocrinology, he looks at behavior, he looks at hormones. And so when the political scientist needed a hormone guy, he got in touch with Jeffrey French.
I wonder how the monkeys have been responding to this presidential campaign. How does one measure cortisol levels?
So you can measure it in many kinds of liquids that come out of your body. For Jeffrey French, he uses it by looking at the monkey's urine. I think there was a really great moment that Amanda captured where he, every morning his routine is to give them one Cheerio, and in exchange they produce urine by getting a Cheerio. We did not go with urine. We thought urine would be a little bit harder, so instead we did it through saliva.
And we shipped him to a lab, and out at the lab in Nebraska, they processed it. So it was a matter of spinning it, getting out all the dirt, like distilling the cortisol and then measuring it.
You went, as you said, to three different parties. I imagine you didn't ask every single person to spit into the bucket.
It wasn't a bucket, to be fair to us. It wasn't like a big bucket.
In fact, Leonard, I even brought it for you. We don't need to take a saliva sample
now,
but
curious.
I just thought you might like to see it. I mean, it's a very tiny little tube. It's 1.5 milliliters, and we gave everyone this little collection. A teeny straw, a teeny tube, and a napkin for your convenience in case
and
it gets messy.
We will put a picture of it on our website.
Absolutely.
So listeners can understand what this is all about. So you actually had every person?
We didn't. I mean, of course, we went to parties where people were there to watch the debate, and so we tried to be as respectful as possible and just engage people who were curious.
And people were eager to help you out?
Oh, lots of funny responses to this. It's anecdotal, but I have to say that we got a little bit more skepticism from the Republican parties, a little bit more worries about privacy and what kind of information was going to come out from this. I mean, we went through the institutional review boards at our researchers' respective institutions, but still a lot of people were worried about, well, you could get my DNA from it. You could, like, give it to the FBI.
Could you?
I don't think so. I mean, the researchers, when we cleared it with them, they said that they were only looking for cortisol, and then they discarded the samples. So I don't know how the FBI would.
But it sounds to me like you might be adding to their stress levels if they were worried about all those.
You know, that there's so many things about our little project that were not scientific. This is not the way it would be done in a peer-reviewed journal. We were doing these out at bars. People were eating and drinking. We don't know what medications they were taking.
Their pre-existing health conditions.
Right. We just didn't feel like, you know, at a bar, people don't really want to answer a long survey sharing that kind of information.
But you did have people fill out a questionnaire.
We did. We had people fill out a questionnaire, and I can give you some of the results.
Please.
We asked, you know, the American Psychology Association had put out a statistic recently that was like 52% of Americans are stressed about the election. And we decided to dig a little bit deeper, and we were like, well, what exactly is stressing you out? So this was in the survey, and we found that almost half – this is an equal number of liberals and conservatives – almost half of the people we surveyed said Trump was stressing them out. And then the next thing, do you want to guess what that might be?
It wasn't Hillary was stressing
them out? It was not Hillary in number two. The second place was us, the media. Mm-hmm. We were stressing people out. And in third place, with a third, about a third, were people stressed out by Hillary, which I thought was kind of interesting. And then the survey also sort of dug into, this was how we figured out you know, who was stressed by what, was by having the survey.
And you found that Trump supporters were more stressed than Clinton supporters.
Well, this is what we didn't expect. So it wasn't a scientific study, as Elaine has pointed out. There were lots of things that were sort of we couldn't control for. But it was what the researchers said to us is if there is a really strong finding, if something is there to be seen, it will kind of punch through all the noise. That's the expression they used. And so what they found was that people who were supporting Trump walked into the door at these debate watch parties with cortisol levels that were two times as large as the Clinton
supporters. They walked in the door with them.
Which was odd because that's not what we were looking for.
So the debate wasn't exacerbating the situation.
No. I mean, we charted over the course of the night, right? We did a sample at the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. And that's what we expected to see was kind of like, oh, in midway, people will have spiked. And Clinton supporters went up a little bit. And Trump supporters went down naturally over the course of the night, which is what happens to your cortisol level naturally over the course of the day. So the strangest finding was just how people walked in the door, how they were feeling about that night.
But you were also talking to New York area Republicans. Aren't they perhaps culturally different from other Trump supporters around the country? Would that have had an impact on their cortisol levels?
I mean, we have lots of theories and why the cortisol levels might have been different because we weren't really able to distill it down to figure out. But I mean, yeah, one obvious answer might be, as a New York metro area conservative, you might be a little bit more stressed than a conservative who's in, you know, Texas or some area where there are a lot more people who share your views.
I'm speaking with Elaine Chen, who's the project manager, and Amanda Aronchik, who is a reporter for WMIC's Only Human podcast, Look at Our Cortisol Levels as an Indicator of Stress. And by the way, you can find a link to Only Humans episode on our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate. You can also find the Only Human podcast on its own by going to wnyc.org. This episode talks about how liberals and conservatives respond differently to the same stresses. Are there biological factors at play here? Does body chemistry help determine whether you'd be politically liberal or conservative?
I think what these researchers would say is that they're still in the very early stages of this field, and they call it biopolitics, and it's only really been about 10 years. But Kevin Smith, the political scientist, says that his findings, which are these little studies looking at the different ways liberals and conservatives respond to, say, fear or stress or joy, he sees without a doubt that there is a difference.
I'm sure that they're using MRIs as well, not just cortisol.
That's right. They're using all sorts of different ways of measuring our physical responses to different situations.
Well, considering the fact that this is an atypical political season, we've never done this before, so we have no idea how this compares.
That's exactly right. I mean, when we set out, one of the things we wanted to find was like, is this election more stressful than previous ones? And they're like, that's so hard to measure. There's been no consistent way to measure that looking backwards. And it, as you say, it might not be that useful looking forward because this election has just been so weird.
Does stress affect whether or not we vote? People with higher cortisol levels vote less, don't they?
One of the studies that Kevin Smith did found that people who had higher cortisol levels late in the afternoon voted less. They went back and looked at their voting records to see if they had voted in the last six elections. And they did vote less, which to me is very counterintuitive. I think I would have thought you'd get really stressed out, you'd really engage, and they found the opposite.
Yeah, you'd vote and you'd feel a little bit of relief. At least I did my part.
Right.
Dr. French and Dr. Smith published a paper that concluded voting at home by mail is a less stressful experience than going to the polls on election day.
Yeah, I mean, and that was, intuitively you think that would be the case, but there hadn't actually been a study to verify that that was the case. So they had, they put together a bunch of people and they asked them to choose different modes of voting. And then they saw that the people who had the lowest levels of cortisol, at least from that experience, were ones who voted at home.
Although some states make it difficult to vote by absentee ballot, New York being one of them. Is this study an argument in favor of making different voting options available in the United States?
I think Kevin Smith would say without a doubt that, you know, if you look back, there were 93 million people who could have voted in the last election who didn't. So it's not like this would make a radical, huge difference, but it might make a small difference if there were more options for voting.
You sent this to labs. Did the labs think this was a fun thing to be doing?
Well, the lab was the guy that we worked with, this guy, Jeffrey French, out at the University of Nebraska. And so it was his lab.
So this adds to his own research.
Yeah. I mean, they thought, as I said, they thought it was like a pilot study. It was pointing towards interesting things.
And how did you correlate the saliva samples to the questionnaires?
That was Elaine's job.
I mean, the logistics that we had to figure out for this project were unlike any that we have ever done before, because we wanted to keep it anonymous at the same time that we wanted those cortisol levels to correlate with answers to the survey. So that's why on the little bag that I gave you, Leonard, there's a number on it. And so that's how we kept track of people. The number was on your test tubes and the number was also on the survey.
So I would have been 132.
132. That would have been your number. And we would have, on the survey, we would have written that that was your number too. So that's how we would correlate those levels with the survey answers.
Does the stress of the election affect our behavior in other areas of our life? Last week, the Wall Street Journal published an article that showed that Americans slept an average of 4.2 minutes less than they normally would the night of the first presidential debate. Well, I don't know, 4 minutes isn't all that much. But the article also talked about how psychologists are hearing a lot about the election in therapy sessions with their patients.
I mean, we've been following this really closely. Every time there was an article that pinged up that said stress in the election, we looked at it.
And there was one almost every day.
There was one every day. So, I mean, I guess what we would say is, yes, this has been stressful for a lot of different people in different ways. We certainly heard lots of stories about people going to their therapists to talk about Donald and Hillary.
Did Drs. Smith and French see anything odd in the things that you were sending them? Or did this confirm other aspects of their research?
That's funny. When you first said that, what I thought you meant was like, did they see anything odd in the tubes of saliva that we spent?
Well,
the answer is yes. They said they did.
Because too much phlegm?
Too much. Well, just people were out.
Food
and drinking.
Alcohol. And, yeah. Some of the tubes were red because people were drinking red wine.
Yeah. They is that true?
Well, yes.
Well, wine, would wine have an effect on cortisol?
You know, we did ask in the survey if you drank alcohol during the debate because that could make a difference. Sort of, I think, not entirely clear which way it would swing things, but it is a factor to consider. And so French and Smith, in helping us look at the results, took that into account.
What might another experiment look like? Would you consider other hormones that affect behavior like testosterone?
Oh, interesting. I mean, we're working on another experiment right now, but it's very different. Do you want me to tell you a little
Please.
Bit about it? So we've signed up with some researchers who are at Columbia and NYU and are looking into flu and how flu is spread. And there's usually very little information about flu because people don't usually go to the doctor with flu unless it's really, really bad. So they don't know that much about how it spreads. And so we have signed ourselves up. The last 6 weeks, we've been swabbing our noses and sending it to researchers, and they're going to chart and keep track of whether or not who gets the flu, who's an asymptomatic carrier of the flu, which I didn't even know was a thing, that you could have the flu but not have symptoms but share it with Elaine or me. So that's our next project.
I always just thought that it came from holding on to the pole in the subway or standing next to somebody who's sneezing.
I mean, that's something that's really interesting, is that flu is such a common everyday thing. You kind of would think that on the for the science side of it, we would know everything about it, but there's actually a lot that we don't know. I mean, Amanda was just pointing out, we don't know the number of people who are asymptomatic carriers, people who have the virus but aren't showing any symptoms and don't feel sick. And the other thing that we don't know is that even though in theory we know it could be spread by you putting your hand on something and someone else before that had, like, you know, put their hand on and they were sick, we don't actually know if that's actually how you get it. So there are different ways that you could get it, but in terms of how it happens in real life, they don't really know what is the primary way that it's spread. And so that's why there are studies going on besides ours to figure out how it gets spread between people.
And do you see any coincidence in the fact that we hold our elections around flu season?
Oh, interesting. We're going to have to dig into that one.
Meanwhile, have you published your findings here?
We put out a podcast. So all the results are in that episode. It's the most recent episode of Only Human. And we've also put out a video that goes with it. Two of our subjects is this wonderful couple from Texas, and they've got some great tips.
You also asked people at the station to participate. What kind of response did you get from people here who might have thought, well, I'm not sure I took a job in broadcasting to become a human guinea pig?
I got to say, I mean, people at the station were pretty up for it. I mean, I think because our request was so unusual, we actually got a lot of takers on it. And in fact, I had to sort of like turn people down because I needed certain buckets that I needed to fill, and they did not include public radio types.
Thank you both so much for being on our show, Elaine Chen and Amanda Aronchik. We've been talking about the Only Human project to find out how much stress we actually experience when we're watching things like presidential debates. And you can find a link to it on our show page at wnyc.org/lowpate.